Hello, sports fans, and welcome to another edition of Yesterday Sports on the Sports History Network. And make sure to check out sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways. I have two signed books I'm giving away. One is titled No Nonsense, Old School Weight Training, and the other is Reliving 1970s Old School Football.
One of the biggest stories in recent college football and all college sports is the NIL, the name, image, and likeness. That's where student athletes get paid. It's not a new concept. It happened over 100 years ago, too. And Timothy Brown of footballarchaeology.com is here to tell us all about it in just a moment.
This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. Your host, Darren Hayes, is podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron one day at a time. So as we come out of the tunnel of the Sports History Network, let's take the field and go no huddle through the portal of positive gridiron history with PigskinDispatch.com.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at SportsHistoryNetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com. Welcome once again to the Pigpen, your portal to positive football history. And it is Tuesday, and we are happy to say that Timothy P. Brown of footballarchaeology.com has joined us once again to talk about another one of his great tidbits. Tim, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Darren, thank you. Good to see you again. Hear your voice. Have the opportunity to chat a little bit.
Yeah, this is, the football seasons are winding down in all of the leagues here. This coming weekend, we have the Super Bowl coming up. You know, we're actually recording this a couple weeks ahead of time, but we know who the participants are. And, it's not so good for your neck of the woods. The Lions had a great season and didn't work out their way at the end of the game of the NFC yep. Championship.
Yeah, unfortunately, I grew up a Packers fan, and they bit us the week before, and then the Lions. So I don't know that I really care anymore about either team, either team that's in there.
Sometimes that's what makes it fun. If you have no vetted interest in it, you just sit back and hope for good football and enjoy the athletes and some of the great things that they do and what happens. And you're not worried one way or the other if something bad happens.
Yeah, so. Yeah. My daughter. Who grew up in Detroit but lives in San Francisco, she kind of couldn't lose in that game. So really she's got a continued rooting interest, but not for me.
Yeah. What are you going to do? Well, paying players, these players in the NFL are getting paid quite a bit. And it sort of segues into what we're going to be talking about now. We know that now college players are getting paid with the NIL contracts and everything. But you have a story in one of your tidbits from a little while back where you talk about some players getting paid in college back almost 100 years ago. And maybe you'd like to discuss that with us today.
Yeah, well, I think it the idea of paying somebody to participate in sports, and particularly at the college level, that's as old as people, as long as from the day that people said, hey, it's important for my college to beat your college, from that moment, they started finding ways to make sure that good athletes attended this school or that school. And for a long, long time, it was an informal process. There used to be like the banker in town would pay for a kid to go to college. If he happened to be a good athlete and you went to Old State U, that was great. They're also like way back in the day, top student athletes often were like, they'd be like agents for cigar manufacturers or chewing gum manufacturer, anything that was sold on campus. And then if they could influence people's buying behavior, they got paid money, for that kind of thing. And there's a lot of that kind of stuff went on. And then obviously there were the easy or no-show jobs that that guys had as well. But so, I mean, there's always been kind of the under the table thing. And then in 1929, there was a big report. The Carnegie Foundation, you know, did a report on college football, basically criticizing all of this underground payment, you know, system, and, you know, having guys there who maybe weren't really the greatest students, etc. And so the funny thing about that, I mean, it was one of those things that kind of just ignored. I mean, the Great Depression started shortly after they issued the report, so people kind of had, you know, bigger problems to worry about. But there were, you know, a handful of people, professors, you know, folks directly involved in athletics who were kind of come and say, we should pay these guys. You know, they should get a percentage of the gate, or, you know, they should get. There was a guy at Missouri who said, you know, the players should get $2 per hour for practice. Now, that doesn't sound like much, but it'd be the same as $36 an hour today, you know, beer money, you know, for a college athlete. And then there were a couple of student newspapers, Minnesota and UCLA, came out saying, hey, you know, the football players in particular, they basically subsidize all other sports, which was true at most bigger schools at the time. And I've, you know, I've got documentation on that that I'll probably put out in another tidbit. But so anyways, you know, and then others were just arguing, like, you know, football in particular, and then later on basketball and baseball, they were commercialized, you know, they were professionalized in every way other than paying the players. You know, the coaches got big time money. People had to pay money to attend the games. And, you know, then they started selling video rights, and then they started selling TV rights. So, you know, there were these pots and pots of money. So, I mean, if you looked at a big time college athletic program, that is a pro program. You know, it's run by professionals. In some ways, it's run for professionals, right? Mm-hmm. Right. And the only thing that wasn't, quote, professional about it was that the athletes didn't get paid. They got a scholarship, you know, at bigger schools, and then eventually they'd get some spending money and, you know, da-da-da. But nothing at all like what their actual market, you know, power was. And so now this NIL is out there, you know, all of a sudden guys are, you know, starting to make some pretty good money. Some guys are better off staying in college an extra year than signing some, you know, low-level rookie contract. Now, obviously, then their pro contract, that clock starts, you know, doesn't start clicking or, you know, ticking for another year. But, you know, if somebody tells me I can make whatever, $1 million through NIL, you know, versus, you know, whatever, you know, $800,000 or whatever the current rookie contract is worth, you know, you got to think about it. So it's just really, it's been a long time a coming, right? And like myself, I don't necessarily like some of the things the impact it's going to have on the game. But that's just a selfishness on my, you know, whereas the kids deserve the money, you know, just like artists or, you know, musicians or a kid who invents, you know, writes a piece of software or whatever, you know, TikTok sort of influencer, whatever, you know. So anyways, it's one of those kind of funny things. It's that conflict has always been there. Now it's more or less out in the open. So I think that's good.
Yeah, because I mean, if it wasn't for the student athletes, people wouldn't be paying to go watch an empty football field or basketball court or whatever event they're going to. So yeah, those kids deserve it, and they work hard. And you know, I was kind of surprised though. You know, I knew when the NIL was coming out that you know, players were going to be getting paid, but I had no idea there was going to be as lucrative for some of these folks as it is. I mean, I was astounded. The LSU gymnast, and I forget what her name is. She's on a couple commercials now, and she's a social influencer. She's making millions by her likeness and image. So it's amazing.
Yeah. And, you know, so some people are going to get that money based on, frankly, what they look like. right? Others, you know, their personality, just their, you know, obviously she had to be smart enough to, I mean, she's a very attractive young lady, but, you know, she figured out the game and was doing some, she's, you know, I mean, I've never watched her stuff, but I assume she's got to have a presence and delivery, whatever it is, right? So smart enough to take advantage of that and the situation she was in. So, yeah, more power to her.
Yeah, definitely has a couple extra bucks left over after buying the school books each semester. That's for sure. Yeah.
She didn't even have to sell her school books to the old days.
Right. Well, that's interesting that it's been around that long, that, the debate's been long for 100 years now. So that's incredible. Yeah. So that's why it's such a great read. And maybe you could share with the listeners how they too could partake in your tidbits.
Yeah, easy enough. Just go to footballarchaeology.com, subscribe on Substack, and, or I should say, you can just visit on Substack whenever you want. You can follow me on Twitter. So whatever fits your fancy.
Well, hey, Tim, we really appreciate you coming on here and sharing another one of these great stories of football and aspects of football of old that, you really have big meaning in today's college football world. And we appreciate you. And folks, make sure you check out footballarchaeology.com. We have the links in the show notes to this tidbit, and it takes you into Tim's realm of archaeology.com, like you talked about. And Tim, we will love to talk to you again next week about another aspect of football.
Very good. Look forward to chatting again.
We're taking a peek over at the chains and the down marker. It's fourth and long. We're going to have to punt the ball and get on out of here, but we'll have another series tomorrow for your football history headlines, so be sure to tune in. We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. PigskinDispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast. PigskinDispatch.com is a proud affiliate of the Sports History Network, the headquarters of sports yesteryear.
Hey there, football fans. This is Ross, the host of the Pigskin Tales podcast. I just need a few moments of your time to talk about the host of the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, Darren Hayes. He's expanded the Pigpen to search out information on the history of all team sports. It's a quest to find out about the competitors, teams, and places chronicled throughout athletic history through the uniforms and gear the participants used and wore. And he is taking you, the listener, with him on this educational journey to preserve sports history on the Sports Jersey Dispatch, found here on the Sports History Network. His newest podcast, called Jersey Dispatch, is all based on the jerseys that all the greats used to wear. You can find Darren Hayes and the Pigskin Dispatch podcast, as well as Jersey Dispatch, on your favorite podcast provider multiple times each week. So remember that Darren Hayes, the host of the Pigskin Dispatch and Jersey Dispatch podcasts, is found right here on the Sports History Network.